You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org. There's an app for that.
Any organization whose first priority is evangelization should never take a penny from the government.
The etiquette of contemporary postmodern America is that all persons should just stand beside one another and say, we're together in spite of all of our differences. But what that really implies is a relativity of truth.
The reason some Lutheran pastors and congregations no longer practice closed communion is because they simply are no longer willing to insist on the doctrine of the Lord's Supper in the Lutheran confessions.
Confessional Lutheran deadheads love Issues Etc.
We know that this time frame is very important. It's crucial. Often, young people who go away to college or university with a pro-life conviction come out 4 or 5 years later having lost that conviction. Some of them have entirely changed their minds, and the pressure on the college and university campus to adopt not only the pro-life position but a lot of other presuppositions that go along with it is incredibly strong. So how do we equip people going off to college in college to not only make the case but also defend the pro-life position there on the campus, if not in the classroom, then with those who join them in the classroom? It's a big question. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about defending the pro-life position on the college campus with John Ensor here for the first half hour of the program on this Thursday afternoon, February the 21st. And then a little bit later, Pastor John Fraser will join us. We'll talk about the benediction in the scriptures. Our call-in number, if you'd like to join us here on this Thursday, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-6943. You can send us an email with questions or comments, talkback at issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at issuesetc. In hour two of Issues Etc., we'll spend some time with George Conger of getreligion.org. We'll talk about two issues: the Guardian's coverage of Pope Benedict's resignation and media coverage of Christianity and yoga. Dr. Robert Sorensen will help us remember Matthias the Apostle, who's remembered on, Saturday, I believe, February the 24th, Matthias the Apostle on the church's calendar. Then we're going to spend some time with Pastor Heath Curtis talking about the first century bishop and martyr Polycarp, a big one. And we'll round off with the last 15 minutes of Issues Etc. Dr. Alvin Schmidt will be our guest, author of the book, The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West. We're going to talk about two stories in the news regarding Islam: the failure to pass a law banning violence against women in Afghanistan and sexual violence against women in the country of Egypt. That's the lineup for the next 2 hours of Issues Etc. John Ensor is president of Passion Life, based in Marietta, Georgia, and co-author of the new book, Stand for Life, A Student's Guide for Making the Case and Saving Lives. John, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you for having me, Todd.
On the college campus, what is the biggest obstacle for the case for life?
Probably the moral cultural, the moral relativity fog that just invades our culture at large today, and the way that many of our opponents would try to not argue the case but almost dismiss it rather than to really look into the facts of the situation. So I think that's the biggest challenge, is overcoming that moral relativism and reshaping the discussion of around abortion around the only key issue, which is what is the unborn? Because everybody will recognize that once that is established, the discussion about whether it's right to kill a human being becomes clearer.
It's difficult to describe fog, but how would you describe the moral fog of relativism?
Well, you hear it all the time when people simply say, well, who are you to judge? But, of course, they're making a judgment in that very statement. So, you know, it's an evasive debate tactic to a certain degree, I think, because people really don't live out a morally relative life in practice. And again, I think what we need to do as defenders of life is to, again, turn the discussion about abortion to the one main issue and realize that no matter where they're coming from, we all share a common equality. And so the question is, do the unborn share in this common human equality? And if they do, then one set of behavior seems permissible and just and right. And if not, another set of choices are made.
Why is the college or university campus a particularly important battleground when it comes to this issue?
Well, I think there's two reasons. Scott really picked up on the one, which is that we are fighting for the hearts and the minds of the next generation of decision makers and policy makers. And we want to create strong, articulate, effective defenders of human life and human rights right there on the campus. But the other main reason is the one that I bring out mostly in the book, which is that college students are the ones having the most abortions as a segment of the population. And so if you are a pro-life student on campus, you are on the battlefield. It's your peers, it's your friends that are facing this decision. And we want to do two things in this book, basically equip people to be strong and effective, articulate, winsome defenders of life in the culture at large, but also to turn them into lifesavers and know how to act compassionately and directly and helpful, intervene to save real women, or actual women, I should say, who are pregnant and in crisis, and help them find the life-affirming resources and help that they need.
So this isn't just about adopting a cause on campus?
No, it really isn't. I mean, the book, we co-wrote the book really because we felt that each of us have written books separately that contribute something to the cause of life, but is actually much better if we do it together, which is to create an apologetic, strong apologetic for making the case for life, which is what Scott Klusendorf and his folks do. And then I come out of the pregnancy help movement, and my focus has been much more on the Christian community and teaching sort of the biblical foundations of our pro-life work, and to make sure that it's rooted in grace and that it is aimed at saving lives now, so that we have kind of an underground railroad of our generation operating, which is while we work to change the laws and to change and afflict the conscience of our nation, we're still reaching out and helping actual women who are in crisis, young couples who are in crisis, and helping them find God's provision for them and their child. And that's the pregnancy help movement that has developed over the last 40 years. That's my background. And, so it's together, that biblical grounding and the apologetics for the culture, winning the hearts and minds of the next generation, but helping them recognize that they can save lives right now, right where they live, right on campus, because they live in the very place that the abortion as an industry or a business is targeting for their work.
One more question about the generation itself. It was noted at the most recent March for Life in January by many observers, and this has been kind of a cumulative observation over the last 10 years or so, that the number of young people, college age or near college age people, that are out there vocal when it comes to this issue is increasing. What does that tell you, John?
Well, it gives me hope. I suspect it gives you hope. I know that it brings despair to abortion advocates. They see the graying of their folks, so to speak, and we see a next generation flooding into our ranks in ever-increasing numbers. I think it's, there have been articles talking about how, I came of age in the 60s and 70s, so I understand feminism and all that happened during that period of time and how they all march for the right to abortion, not only to have their children and their grandchildren now marching for life, is dismaying. But I think it's a sign of progress on our side that slowly we are winning hearts and minds. I think there's a long way to go, but clearly one indicator is whether or not young people are filling in the ranks, and they are. Scott and I, just we have a passion. We just are passionate about helping these young people grab the baton and run with it. And we've learned a lot over the last 40 years. I mean, the modern pro-life movement is about 40 years old. And we want the next generation not to start where we do, but to start where we're ending, or start where we are now and run forward with the movement. And so that's why I wrote this book.
You mentioned several times before the one main issue in the debate, with about a minute or so before we take our first break. What is that one main issue?
Again, I just want to commend to the audience to stop and check out what Scott Klusendorf has said on this, but he's really helped us apologetically frame the debate. He tells a story, again, about if somebody comes in, if a little child comes in and says, "Mommy, can I kill it?" The first question that's going to come out of mom's mouth is, "Well, what is it?" And that is the issue today. What is the unborn? If the unborn is a part of human life, if it's living, if it's whole, if it's distinct, then it has human rights attached to it. If it's not, it's okay to kill it. And we have no problem. It's a choice. You know, you can do with it what you want. But if it is a living human being, then we can't destroy it. A civil society, a just society, cannot destroy it. It must protect it. And so the entire discussion really hinges on one question. What is the unborn? And secondly, to demonstrate that that is human using science, not merely religion, and to be able to make the philosophical case that there are no differences of significance between an unborn child at 2 months in the womb, let's say, and a 2-year-old or a 20-year-old that justify killing it.
We're talking about defending the pro-life position on college campuses. John Ensor is our guest, president of Passion Life, based in Marietta, Georgia, co-author of the new book, Stand for Life, A Student's Guide for Making a Case and Saving Lives. Stay tuned. In the next 15 minutes, we are going to give away a copy of Stand for Life. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email with a question or a comment as we talk about defending the pro-life position on college campus. Talk back at issuesetc.org or send us a tweet at issuesetc. More with John Ensor after this. You can call it what you like.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Does your church need a backup organist? The Virtual Organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century.
Oh, come, Emmanuel.
19th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about making the case for life on the college campus. John Ensor is our guest. He's co-author of the new book, Stand for Life, A Student's Guide for Making the Case and Saving Lives. You can find out more about Stand for Life at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. All right, John, we've got the setting where this case needs to be made, and we've got the case that needs to be made, that main thing that you need to say. Why is it that you pointed out earlier that the case needs to be made for the humanity of the unborn on the basis of science and sound reason, not just religion? What did you mean by that?
Well, I say that because when we're going to talk effectively with people who don't share our worldview or a common knowledge of the scriptures, we're going to have to be able to articulate our case for life in language and using reasoning that connects with the people that we're talking to. So I don't want to downplay the role of scripture or faith in our life. I am a pastor. You know, this is my life's work, is to teach the scriptures. But we're not done yet by just teaching what the Bible says about human life. We also need to understand how to articulate the case for life in a secular culture. And we have the opportunity to do that, starting with our own Constitution that recognizes that rights, human rights, are connected to humanness. We are endowed by our Creator as the religious side or the spiritual side of that equation. But even for the non-religious person, they will argue that they have rights that come with being human. And therefore, our case, our challenge, is to help them recognize that if that's true, that if there are natural rights that come with being human, then the only question about abortion is, what is the unborn? And if it's human, then it too has natural rights, because that's when the natural rights begin, at the moment of our human conception.
Should we also be aware of the fact that on the college campus, there's not just a neutral audience there. There are the strong advocates, even the organized advocates, for the abortion position.
There are young people who get excited about this thing or that side on both sides of this equation, which is also part of the reason we wanted to write a book, to help people think reflectively and to deepen their roots into things that will last a lifetime, not just the enthusiasm of being a freshman or sophomore on campus and being free to get out and be excited about something. We want conviction, and we want enduring love and passion for the long haul of their life to fight and to stand for life. And so we want both sides of this. But yes, there are. But I think on campus, you know, the nature of college these days, and certainly high school, and this book is good for high school students as well, is to recognize that a lot of people's beliefs are being formed and shaped. And this is the perfect time for us to go in there and help them think through rationally and biblically what they believe, why they believe it, and why it's true for all people. And to help them stand and resist some of the other things that are being taught, and to help their own classmates and roommates understand and think it through as well.
Let's deal with we can't deal with all of them, but just a few of the big ones. The first one would probably be my body, my choice. What is the best way to respond to this objection?
Yeah, I think the best way would be to say we absolutely agree that it's your body and your choice if you'll except for one reality, and that is before we approve that, we must first of all demonstrate that the unborn is not a human being. So we have to go back to the question, what is the unborn? Because if it is a living, distinct, and whole human being, then it too has rights that need to be supported and defended. We believe in choice right up until it starts to affect the life of another human being. So we don't care what they do with their own body and so on and so forth. And the best way to illustrate that would be, again, to do what we teach in the book, bring out the toddler. You know, it's not about privacy. There are things that we could do that are wrong in the privacy of our own room, so to speak. We could kill a two-year-old in the privacy of our own room. But people would be aghast. They would never support such a thing. And the answer to it is why? Well, it's because it's a human being, and therefore it's wrong to kill it. So with the abortion issue, we go back to the basic question, what is the unborn? If it's human, it has inherent rights, and we need to defend those rights in order to defend us all.
Another objection that's often raised, and it is kind of hypothetical, but it is, look, the mother's health, and it's related to my body, my choice, the mother's health takes precedence. This needs to be done to defend the health or the life of the mother.
Well, the two are distinct, and I think those of us who deal with ethics try to make that distinction. And also, the language is really tricky here because the Supreme Court has ruled a lot of legislation is handed down with concerns about the health of the mother. But then health is defined by the courts as being not just physical health, but emotional health, psychological health, even familial health. So when Roe v. Wade was passed down, it looked like it had the sort of reasonable breakdown of rights, depending on how far along the child was developed. And so in cases of the health and the life of the mother, such and such. And then health is defined to basically mean a woman can have an abortion for any reason or no reason throughout all 9 months of pregnancy. So my first answer to that is you've got to be careful to define what people mean by health. And right now, health really doesn't have anything that prevents abortion or gives any rights to the unborn child whatsoever. And even when it comes to the life of the mother, we do recognize that, for example, with an ectopic pregnancy, if you do not do something medically to intervene in an ectopic pregnancy, the child is going to die, and the mother is going to die as well. And so we perform a surgery. The baby cannot live in the fallopian tube. It cannot live. Our goal is not to go in and destroy a human being. Our goal is to save a mother's life, and there's a consequent death that occurs in that process. And the pro-life movement agrees that that is a sad reality, but it makes sense to most of us that you can save the mother's life even though the child dies in the process. Now, there are other situations in which other measures can be looked at, and I think most women would also agree that they want to save both. So you do whatever you can to save both and treat both.
Do you think, with about a minute here, that when dealing with young men and women on the college campus, many of them are actually aware of what abortion actually is and does? Just about a minute.
Yeah, that's a great question, Todd. You know, I have to tell you myself, I graduated from high school in 1973 when Roe v. Wade was legalized, and I was clueless for a long, long time. Became a preacher, went to college, went to seminary, started my work. I was clueless. And I have to tell you that it was life-changing for me, clarifying for me to actually see what an abortion is. And I would just encourage our people, there are times where you have to open up your eyes and look at what it is that you're talking about. And if you go to Scott's website at Life Training, you can see a video of what an abortion is. I took my own sons to Dachau in Germany so that we could understand what was happening there. We've looked at pictures of lynchings. There are painful, painful realities that must be looked at in order for us to understand what is our response going to be.
finally, with only about 30 seconds, what's at stake here, John?
Well, I think what's at stake is the advance of the gospel in the world, standing as a country that is principled and compassionate and just. Abortion is something that is, the logic of abortion is cancerous. It starts to spread to other dimensions. There's no way that you can corral it. If you can kill human beings because they are in the way, in the womb, you can kill them at the end of life. So there's this continuum. And throughout all of cultures, throughout all of history, this is the big battle, whether or not human life is respected and protected and nurtured, and whether a just and compassionate society is built around the dignity of the human being, or whether we break down into something far less than that that ends up devouring us all.
John Ensor is president of Passion Life, based in Marietta, Georgia, co-author of the new book, Stand for Life, A Student's Guide for Making the Case and Saving Lives. John, thank you.
Hey, Todd, thank you for having me.
When we come back, we're going to talk with John Fraser about the benediction in Scripture. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery on the 2013 International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights in Strasbourg, France.
It's specialized training in evangelism because the problem that we generally have in presenting the gospel to people who are not believers is that we are frightened witless that they're going to ask us questions or criticize our position. The 2 weeks in France with top apologists gives those people who are registered for the program contact with the major arguments of unbelief in our time and the very best answers. And that means that one gets the ammunition one needs for effective evangelism. So this is an opportunity that you really shouldn't miss.
You can find out more about the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, July 9th through the 20th in Strasbourg, France, at apologeticsacademy.eu.
Athanasius, Bishop of Alexandria in the 4th century, was known for boldly confessing Jesus Christ as both true God and true man. This is what we do at St. Athanasius Lutheran Church in Vienna, Virginia, just outside Washington, D.C., continuing this historic confession of our Savior, who died for us and now comes to us in word and sacrament. If you live in the D.C. area or just visiting, come join us. For more information, find us on the web, St. Athanasius Lutheran Church.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen On Demand page and click Share This.
An umbilical cord of biblical truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most radio talk shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. We rely on you to pay for the production, salary, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, asking you to consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio. The address? LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend on you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration.